Welcome to the Deep Dive. We've got something really special today, a framework that came directly from one of our listeners. It's called the CEO's 4D Power Formula Toolkit Dashboard.
And it is comprehensive. We're talking 16 specific tools that give a full picture of how executives manage, well, everything, from the first spark of an idea all the way to execution.
Okay, let's unpack this. Our mission here is to give you a systematic shortcut through this dashboard. It's built around four stages: discover, design, deploy, and drive.
It's all about the logic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you need to understand how a high-level vision actually turns into predictable results, this framework is basically the blueprint.
You know, what's really fascinating to me is the discipline that this 4D structure imposes. It's rigorous because it's sequential.
You can't skip a step.
You can't. And the biggest trap for leaders is what we call solution-first thinking. You see a problem and you immediately jump to a fix, often an expensive one, without really understanding it. This framework, it's like an institutional safeguard against that exact bias. It forces you to complete one phase before you can even begin the next.
That structural rigor, that's the secret sauce. So what we're going to do is just walk through it. We'll go through each of the four Ds, highlight a couple of the most insightful tools in each one.
And crucially, explain why that tool is so important at that specific moment.
It's a powerful mental model. So let's start at the beginning. Phase one is discover.
The intelligence and insight stage.
Right. It's all about data collection, pattern recognition. This is where you're gathering the raw material, but with a very specific goal: finding the unvarnished truth of the situation.
The mandate of discover is just so foundational. I mean, before you design anything, before you spend a single dollar, you have to be absolutely sure you know the actual underlying problem.
It's like a diagnosis.
Exactly. If you diagnose a cold when the patient has pneumonia, the best treatment plan in the world is completely useless.
And the tool that really embodies this search for the truth is the problem route mapper. It sounds simple, like a flowchart, but it's more than that.
It really is. It's all about establishing causality. You know, we see things like declining engagement, and the first reaction is to blame the product or maybe the marketing budget.
The obvious stuff.
The obvious stuff. But the problem route mapper forces you to ask why again and again until you hit the real issue. Maybe low feature adoption isn't about the feature at all. Maybe the root cause is a clunky sign-up process that a totally different team manages.
And that stops you from wasting millions marketing a feature no one can get to easily.
Precisely.
So that covers the internal side. But discovery also needs an external lens, right, to see what's happening out in the world. And that's where the market forces radar comes in.
Yeah, this tool helps you scan the external environment. A lot of us know the classic PESET analysis: political, economic, social, technological factors.
Sure.
The market forces radar is basically that model, but modernized. It's focused on real-time data, predictive modeling, assessing things like a disruptive new technology or a sudden regulatory shift before you launch a strategy.
So it's not just a snapshot. It's more like a predictive sonar trying to catch waves before they hit the boat.
That's a great way to put it, because if you miss that a key regulation is coming next quarter or that a competitor is about to launch a substitute product, your entire strategy could be obsolete the day you deploy it.
And we can't forget the human element in all this. The dashboard also lists the stakeholder insight grid. That feels critical for discovery.
Oh, it is. Data is one thing, but understanding why people behave the way they do is another. This grid forces you to map motivation.
Or everyone involved.
Everyone. Internal stakeholders are our own employees burning out. Is that driving turnover? And external ones. What's the one pain point our clients are suffering from but not actually telling us? You can't build value for someone if you don't know what they truly need.
Okay, so discover is done. We've established the truth inside and out. We have this mountain of raw data market forces, root causes, stakeholder needs, but that's useless until you turn it into a plan. How does the framework handle that?
Well, that leads us perfectly into phase two, design.
This is where it gets really interesting.
It is, because this is where you translate all those rich insights from Discover into an actual executable business model, a unique value proposition. We're now deep in the strategic growth toolkit.
And the first key tool here is the client value architect.
Such a powerful tool. It keeps your strategy grounded in, well, in utility. Its entire purpose is to define a value proposition that is clearly better than the competition's and directly solves the problems you found in Discover.
Can you give me a practical example of that?
Of course. Let's say Discover revealed your top clients are frustrated by slow report turnaround times. The client value architect would mandate that you design a premium service offering that guarantees a 24-hour delivery.
So you're moving from a vague idea like better customer service to something concrete.
Exactly. Something specific, valuable, and importantly, chargeable. It ensures the resources you're about to spend in the deploy phase are aimed at something clients actually want and will pay for.
That defines the value. But you also need to align the whole organization around delivering it. And that's where the strategy map comes in, right?
Think of the strategy map as the organizational GPS. It visualizes all your strategic objectives and, critically, draws explicit lines connecting them.
So everything is linked.
Everything. It answers the question, if HR invests in new training software, how, specifically, does that help R&D's objective, which in turn helps our overall growth goal?
But those maps can get really complex. Isn't there a risk of just creating a confusing mess?
That's a fair point, and that's why it has to be a living document. But its main benefit is preventing silos. If the sales team's goal doesn't visually connect to a corporate goal on that map, it forces a conversation. Is this objective misaligned? Is it a waste of resources? It becomes the single source of truth for where the company is going.
And you can't talk about design without mentioning the business model canvas. It's foundational.
Absolutely. The canvas is what moves you from, wouldn't this be cool, to how do we actually make money doing this? It maps out revenue streams, cost drivers, key partners, all the machinery needed to deliver the value you just defined. It solidifies the economic viability of the entire design.
Okay, so we've discovered the truth. We've designed the perfect blueprint. Now, the hard part, we actually had to build it. Phase three, deploy.
This is where the rubber meets the road. You're moving from theory to action, and the focus shifts to execution and productivity. It's all about a clean launch and minimizing friction.
Right. The strategy is set. The value is defined. This is about making sure there's no confusion before a single task even begins.
And that's why the first tool is the initiative launch framework. Most projects don't fail because the strategy was bad. They fail because the launch was a mess.
It's the pre-flight checklist.
The mandatory pre-flight checklist. It forces you to define the critical scope, the non-negotiable goals, and who is responsible for what. All with extreme precision before you start. You front load the clarity.
And once you're launched, you need to keep things running smoothly. That's where things like the process execution map come in.
Exactly. These tools are about operational clarity, streamlining execution, managing handoffs.
Let me push back on that a little. If we're spending all this time mapping a workflow and deploy, aren't we just optimizing a process that might have been flawed from the start back in design?
That is an excellent point, and it highlights how these phases pressure test each other. The structure of the process should come from design, but its efficiency gets tested here in deploy.
Ah.
The act of mapping it out might reveal bottlenecks you never anticipated. You might see that a process design with 5 signatures actually creates a 2-week delay in practice. The map brings that delay into the light so you can fix it.
It's the difference between theory and practice. The map ensures the baton is actually passed smoothly in the relay race.
Exactly right. Deployment isn't just about starting the engine. It's about tuning it for optimal performance.
Which brings us to the final phase. Phase 4, D-Drive. This feels like it's about the long game. Sustaining performance, learning lessons.
If we connect this back to the bigger picture, the D-Drive phase ensures all that effort wasn't just a one-off success. It closes the loop. It makes success repeatable and scalable. This is the accountability phase.
And the main tool for that seems to be the performance alignment tracker.
It's the mechanism for ongoing accountability. It's designed to track your progress directly against the strategy map you created back in phase 2. A common use is tracking OKR's objectives and key results across departments. It ensures effort is always tied to results.
So if the strategy map is the GPS, the alignment tracker is the real-time dashboard telling you your speed, your fuel, and if you're still on the right road.
Perfect analogy. But Drive also requires a bit of institutional humility. What happens when we fail? That's where you have the lessons to action framework and the experience leverage log.
Which is so crucial. A lot of companies just want to sweep failures under the rug.
But these tools force you to formalize the learning. The lessons to action framework demands a structured review of failed projects to find clear, actionable steps for next time. And the experience leverage log does the opposite. It captures insights from your successes so you can scale them.
You're creating an organizational memory. You don't make the same mistake twice.
Precisely. And while all this high-level tracking is happening, teams on the ground still have to manage their daily work. That's where a tactical tool like the priority and focus grid comes in.
To make sure the day-to-day work actually aligns with the big picture.
Absolutely. The grid is a simple filter. It helps teams decide which tasks they have to do, which to delegate, and which to defer or just drop. It keeps everyone focused on activities that actually move the needle on the goals being tracked by the alignment tracker.
So what does this all mean? We've come full circle. We use the problem root mapper to discover the truth. We use the strategy map to design the solution. We use the launch framework to cleanly deploy it. And now we're using the performance alignment tracker to drive ongoing improvement.
And the power of it all is that it forces rigor. It stops you from skipping steps. For you, the learner, it compartmentalizes the massive task of running a strategy into four digestible phases. You get this coherent mental model for tackling complexity.
And that interconnectedness is really the whole point. So here's a final thought. If you had to remove just one tool from this entire dashboard, let's say you take out the strategy map from the design phase, suddenly you can't visualize alignment anymore. How does that immediately sabotage the performance alignment tracker in the drive phase? Without the map setting the destination, what is the tracker even measuring success against? It just becomes a list of disconnected data points. Which single piece of alignment from discovery to driving results is the most critical for the whole system to hold together? Something for you to think about.